The Fan on Demand. Melky leads T.O. past Texas.
Here's his 1-0 pitch. Line drive up the middle. Through the glove of Odor. It goes into center field. A base hit. Both scores. Here comes Reyes. The throw. He scores standing up. A two-run shot up the middle by Melky. And the Blue Jays lead it 9-5.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Good morning, 8:03 on your Monday. This is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Four-game series, the Boston Red Sox. Oh, she's a big one. Opens up tonight at the Rogers Center. Coverage begins at 7 right here, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Drew Hutchison against John Lackey in the opener. Lackey's been very good, and Hutchison has been good when rested. And with that All-Star break, he is certainly that tonight. Roof should be open, high of 29 expected this afternoon. No Greg Brady this week. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith, long time with Sportsnet, and you know him from Raptors TV and radio coverage as well. The Blue Jays, Eric, needed to have this series this weekend. The Rangers are in a bad way if Yu Darvish isn't on the hill. We saw that this weekend. They needed it, and they got it. So what stood out in this three-game set and yesterday for you?
You know, I'm going to go back to something that we were talking about when you were asking about best and worst of the weekend. I've got to say that Melky Cabrera still continues to stand out, because even when it was going bad before the All-Star break, he was the one guy that was still playing well, swinging a good stick, providing something for the offense. And he did it again yesterday, timely hit in the seventh with the solo shot to give the lead back to the Jays. Then again late in the game, I believe the next inning in the eighth with the two RBIs. I just think that the way that Cabrera has been playing, and he's, you know what, diving out in left field, making plays defensively. I think he's a guy that has been Mr. Steady. As much as we've seen a little bit of a dip from Batista, and Encarnacion gets hurt, Lynn gets hurt, Laurie gets hurt, there's been a drop for Rasmus.
Reyes has been up and down
Mr.
all year.
Steady. Yeah. Mr. Steady has been Melky Cabrera all season.
He's now hitting .307, three hits yesterday. And I know it's not all about batting average, but for Melky Cabrera it is. It's not about really on base with this guy. He swings. He's a two-hitter. He's a contact hitter. I want to say, I mean, early on his average was around .330. He was really on a tear early in the season. But once everything levels out in terms of the sample size, it's what you hear, that's the term, you know, 90 games in, he's been anywhere from kind of 294 to 310. He's been really in that mix all season. And like you said, I think it does point to marked consistency.
When you think about where he was last year health-wise, and we obviously now know why, and then to get his body back in shape, post-steroid era and everything else too, I think it says something about him that he can go out and prove to people, critics even like you or I or anybody else, that said, all right, now let's see what you can do without any enhancements. And he's doing it. He might not be smacking the ball out as much or as powerfully, but if he can hit like that, if he can defend like that, if he can actually show the mobility on the bases and the field and whatever, I think he's answered a lot of questions, a lot of critics. And I don't know where they'd be without him right now, because as much as they're hovering, they'd be to me, in a far worse spot if not for his contributions.
And like you said, defensively, look at that catch he makes yesterday.
Yeah. And right? He's done that a few times recently. He has. Laying out the body.
He's not an overly fast guy. And I wouldn't describe him as an above-average defender. I guess he's an average defender. But with what little mobility he has, he sure gets to those balls. And I'd say over the last 3-4 weeks, and this team has not been in a real good spot for most of it, he's made some huge plays with the glove. And I remember a game, things were going really well for this team. I think it was against Kansas City. And they were in danger of dropping a game at the Rogers Center. And he made a Yoenis Cespedes type of throw to nail a guy at the plate that would have, I believe, tied the game in the eighth inning, or they would have lost the lead in the eighth inning. He's had really good moments with the glove as well as the bat.
Well, you go back to the series even, and I believe it might have been their only victory in Los Angeles, when he threw out Mike Trout at third base when Trout was trying to, you know, turn the double into the triple. There was another play actually on that road trip as well. I believe it was in Oakland, where he laid the body out, dove head first, and his arm twisted underneath. I thought he broke his wrist. But just the way that he seems to get to the balls, I've been impressed with him the way he's played this year, because, you know, we can talk about the issues that they've had in center. issues that they've had in right field, obviously all over the infield, but left field, there's never been a question, and Cabrera's been the guy.
808, Andrew Walker and Eric Smith this morning. I want to get your take. 416-870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone is the telephone line. Based on what happened this weekend, have your thoughts changed in the Blue Jays at all? Did they officially stop the bleeding with these two wins against Texas? Here's a name, and there's a lot made about Alex Anthopoulos right now and if he needs to do a deal and what type of deal is that. It was reported over the weekend, Bob Elliott reported that Alex Anthopoulos doesn't really have the ability to take on money. Now, there's an article right now, sportsnet.ca, from Ben Nicholson-Smith, and this is the quote from the article. Alex Anthopoulos insists he does have the resources he needs to make deals. The GM said he's ready to get creative, but declined to detail what kind of financial backing he will have in the coming weeks. There's two discussions here, Eric. Number one is, what deals in a perfect fantasy type of world should Alex Anthopoulos be looking at? And number two, what can he do right now?
Here's another question I have, though, as well. With due respect to our own Ben Nicholson-Smith or to, you know, Bob Elliott, who's a friend of the station and been covering the team for so damn long, and I am nowhere near questioning his sources. Which is the truth? Because, Andrew, I wonder, if one story is saying he doesn't have those sources or the resources, another story is saying he does, but then I go back to what happened before the season started when you've got veterans on this team hoping to
deferring
or willing
salary.
To
yeah.
defer salary so that the Jays can be more of a player in the free agent market and go out and sign a big arm or to be a bigger player in free agency overall. So to me, that would lead me to believe that the team does not have the money or Alex Anthopoulos did not have the resources to be the player. So guys were saying, hey, we'll take less or we'll take more over a longer period so that you now have the cash, go get it. That would lead me to believe the money isn't there unless somebody within the Rodgers empire has said in the last X number of weeks or months, all right, the money that you didn't have before, you do have now because we've got to make our run for it and we will do whatever it takes. You've got the cash. Maybe that conversation has happened. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I honestly don't. I'm a big believer in the, hey, it's not my money mentality. But you got to remember that this is not a low-budget Oakland, Kansas City type of lineup. They have ponied up. This is a payroll that's in the upper third
Absolutely.
In Major League Baseball. It's not like they've been cheap before. I don't know the answer to that, though. 8-11, Brady and Walker. Dave and Barry, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, good. What's on your mind?
So I think the dominant figure for me anyways was Marcus Stroman this weekend. Just to see his ability to throw first pitch strikes is absolutely astounding. His command of the fastball is the best on the team by far. And I think for this kid to be able to pitching at this level in this key important part of the season is such a treat to watch as a Blue Jay fan to see what we've groomed in a pitcher that we picked up as a first round draft pick. It's something exciting. I think all Blue Jays fans should really get excited about. What do you guys think?
You're absolutely right. And for a team that has very few first round success stories, right? The Travis Snyders and the Chad Jenkins of the world certainly outnumber Marcus Stroman. To see what he's doing. Now, Mark Burley's had a good season, very good season. And R.A. Dickey, despite being the whipping boy here, has been really good for the last month, month and a half, 2 months. But this kid has been their best guy for the last 6-7 weeks. Their best guy, Eric. And that is why I'm so on the fence with make a deal, don't make a deal, go get this guy. Because how in good conscience can you be willing to give up a guy? And now Marcus Stroman's not going anywhere. He's untouchable. But these guys you have in your system, the Norrises and the Sanchezes, what if those are your next Marcus Stromans? It's terrifying to give those guys up.
It is.
And for what?
It is, but at the same time, there are so many other holes to plug around the rest of the lineup. That I'm not going to say I'll be cavalier with just trading anybody and everybody, but I don't know that I'm willing to wait for a Sanchez, to wait for a Norris, because I don't even know who's going to be playing with them because the cupboard is so bare in other spots.
Out of sight, out of mind, right?
You know,
yeah.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, to use the basketball analogy or angle, Pat Riley is one of those guys who for years, whether it be in New York, whether it be Los Angeles, whether it be in Miami. Give up picks for proven players. You know, continue to play in the now, not trying to play into the future.
Worst tweet of the day coming up shortly. We got time for one more. Stephen King City, you're on Brady and Walker. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think it's going to take a little bit more of a three-game series just to change my mind because, I mean, you got to stay consistent, and hopefully they just focus on beating Boston tonight, score some runs, and take advantage of that terrible offense. And by the way, I think Eric does a great job. I think he should keep focusing on baseball, to tell you the truth. Thanks again.
Thank you, Steve in King City. And he makes a good point. Listen, the Texas Rangers are dreadful. You look at that lineup, and they lost Alex Rios, so they had three guys, I guess four guys that you trust with the bat. Yu Darvish beats him on Friday. No shame there, but this is not the measuring stick. And it's a nice thing that they won 2 of 3 and they stopped that bleeding. But this next week with the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Red Sox again is really going to be that test.
Well, by the time next Friday rolls around, and you're looking at the beginning of August, and you've had a good 2-week stretch after the All-Star break, you've had the trade deadline pass, I think that's, you're going to know what you are at that point. It's a matter of, though, is it too late, or are you setting yourself up for a nice little 6-week run towards the final end of the season?
8:14, let's do worst tweet of the day.
Brady and Walker's worst tweet of the day.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing.
All right, it's Brady and Walker's worst tweet of the day, and this one is terrific. Major League Baseball, the Twitter account, tries to get cute yesterday on Twitter with poor results. They do this either-or thing where you can vote for a player or which player you like better. And they tweeted a picture of Ryan Braun. And as much as we all love the 1989 movie Major League, the tweet says, Ryan Braun or Willie Mays Hayes? Well, it was not long ago that Ryan Braun was kind of in the crosshairs of public opinion, and the responses did not go very well.
Can you read any of them on the air?
At MLB, liar and a cheater. Please don't compare him to Willie Mays Hayes ever again. Thanks. This one just said blocked. Can't read that one. How about Roydy McCheaterson? Put it this way. It was a case of too soon by the official Major League Baseball Twitter account.
Well, you're probably never going to win when you do anything against anybody from Major League.
It's a bad tweet.
I mean, even Corbin Burnson.
Good league, bad tweet. Andrew Walker, Eric Smith. We will come back with the television voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, Buck Martinez. How good does it feel to call a win for once? We'll ask him.
This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
My name is Munenori Kawasaki.
And his 1-0 pitch, line drive up the middle and through in the center field, a base hit. Johnson scores. The throwback to second, bases remain loaded. Kawasaki makes it 7-5.
8:24, it's Brady and Walker on your Monday. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith filling in for Greg Brady this week. And Munenori Kawasaki is an interesting conversation. We'll ask Buck Martinez about him coming up in just a minute. The Jays television play-by-play voice of Sportsnet joining us in seconds. Kawasaki has been, and I'm not saying he should be the everyday second baseman or anything like that, Eric, but Kawasaki is kind of defying what a lot of people think he is right now. He's hitting .294. He has 6 multi-hit games in his last 10. Other than Melky Cabrera, you could make the case over the last month, he's been their best hitter, which is incredible. And this is not a tiny sample size. This has occurred over the last, he has over 100 at-bats.
He has played extremely well for this team, both at the plate and in the field. And he's proven to be more than just a stopgap at this point. So, I mean, to me, you keep rolling with this guy as long as you can because it's the fundamentals as well. He's doing a lot of the little things that other guys maybe haven't been capable of doing, things we've talked about, criticized this team on. He does a lot of those little things. I think he's just smart mentally in terms of his approach to the game.
Buck Martinez joins us now. Your thoughts on Kawasaki, Buck, and you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but are you a little surprised with the level of success this guy's had in the last month?
I am surprised given his physical skills.
Yeah.
I am not surprised given his dedication, determination, and daily fundamental routine. If everybody played with the same approach of Munenori and Kawasaki, it would be a beautiful game. He comes to the ballpark every day thinking about how he can help his team win. That being said, the Blue Jays are 10-15 since he's played the majority of the time at second base.
Yeah.
And he's done his job. He's not the guy that's going to carry this team. He's got 5 RBIs. You know, you need your regulars back. Mooney's done a terrific job, and he's done it 2 years in a row filling in for regulars. He's not a regular. He knows that. He has good at-bats. We love the way he plays the game. He is as fundamentally sound as anybody in baseball. But he just doesn't have the skill set to play every day in the major leagues and be a part of a contending team as an everyday player. As a regular, as a backup, he can really certainly do a lot of things. But even as a backup, he can't come off the bench and steal the base for you. He can't come off the bench and hit a home run for you. So, you know, it's really kind of a catch-22. You know, he's doing a great job helping the teams keep their head above water, but the Blue Jays need their regulars back.
Buck Martinez joins us on Brady and Walker. It's tough. You almost feel bad, right, given what the Blue Jays went through last year, to see how things have gone for the Texas Rangers. And that lineup, pretty much, I don't know, 4-9 yesterday, kind of reminded you of the ragtag lineups the Blue Jays have put on the field for the last month.
Oh, no question about it. And you know what? Nobody's going to feel sorry for one another because everybody's going through it. You know, all you have to do is look at the AL East and look at the Yankees. They lost 4 of their starting pitchers. And they're still 3 games back tied with the Blue Jays. So everybody has to deal with it. The question is, in my mind, who wants to win this division the most? The players are going to have to decide that. They're going to have to step up and fill in the gaps until all the regulars get back. And that's not just for the Blue Jays. I tell you what, don't look now, but Tampa Bay's won 5 in a row. Boston's won 4 in a row. And they're only 7.5 games back. This division is a long way from being decided just yet because all these East teams are going to butt heads down the stretch. And I think it's going to be up to the team with the players that want it the most that's going to make the difference in this division.
Buck, with that said, I know you've been asked this probably a bunch of times over the last month or so, but it seems like maybe the answer changes week to week based on results, not only just from the Jays, but you know, Baltimore, New York, Boston, Tampa, as you just mentioned. What do you do then if you're the Jays? Do you stay the course and wait for the healthy bodies? Do you try and inject some life into the lineup? I mean, it's kind of a lot of decisions that need to be made fairly quickly by Alex Anthopoulos.
No question about it. I'm glad I'm not in his shoes because it is a tough set of decisions that he has to make. Here we are on July 21st. We're 10 days away from the trade deadline. Now, you look at your situation, you say, okay, if we had Edwin Lind and Lurie back, then we're in good shape. But when are we going to get those guys back? That's the big question. There are talks that both Lind and Encarnacion are going to go out on a rehab this week and get started in the process of coming back to the Blue Jays, but you don't know how that's going to go. Lurie's still dealing with that broken finger. So, you know, yeah, if everything was great, you'd say, okay, well, let's get a stopgap measure. But the problem with the Blue Jays is that they don't have that wealth of talent in the minor leagues to dip into and say, okay, we can give up a few of these guys because we've got a surplus. They don't have a surplus. They are very thin in the minor leagues. They've got some top-notch prospects, especially pitching prospects. But, you know, outside of Dalton Pompey and maybe A.J. Jimenez, I mean, they don't have a whole lot of guys that are clamoring to come to the big leagues, and other teams are clamoring to acquire. So as many people that sit out there with that fantasy mentality of saying, let's go get David Price and Ben Zobrist, well, how are you going to acquire those people, and who are you going to have to give up? I certainly wouldn't give up Stroman, Hutchinson, Norris, or Sanchez for any of those guys because those two players, in my mind, are not the difference in turning your team around. I think you got to get your players healthy and get back. And you have to hold your head above water until they come back.
While these players aren't healthy, they could sure use a guy or two to step up. And Colby Rasmus has not been that guy. But given what we saw this weekend, it looks like that All-Star break, Buck, might have come at the right time for Colby.
Yeah, you know what, and he certainly has the potential to do that. I mean, he's got power in his bat, and he can come up with big hits. And, you know, there are a bunch of guys that can step up, and we're seeing Melky, who's been terrific all year long, and he's got a couple of three-hit games and back-to-back games. And Bautista, everybody points at him, but you know what, he's not getting a lot to hit. And he's trying to do things and expand his zone, which is taken him away from his good approach that worked so well in the first part of the season. But he doesn't have Double E or Lindy or Glory behind him to help him out. So he thinks, and this is my observation, he thinks that he's got to do more. But you can't do more by chasing bad pitches, and I think he's fallen into that rut a little bit.
Buck, when you look at what's coming up for the Jays as well, this, you know, timing-wise, we go back to, you know, the decisions that Alex Anthopoulos has to make. It's almost like everything's happening all at once, but it's happening maybe too much altogether because you're going to get guys back in the next 2 weeks, but you've got the trade deadline coming up in 2 weeks as well. Are you going to get the bodies back before the deadline? Can you make a decision? Oh, by the way, you're playing a bunch of sub-500 teams right now that could make or break the decision that you might want to make based on whether you have those healthy bodies or not. There's so much going on that all these intangibles and factors that play into the ultimate decision.
You know, and that's one thing that you have to cut some slack to the front office, because the fans can sit back and make a one-dimensional decision of, we need to add players. Well, Alex has to think about, if we add players, then we get these three players back, what are we going to do? We're going to be stuck with 30 players in 25 spots on the roster. You also have to factor in, you're right, you mentioned the schedule, and that's an important fact too, because the Orioles are going to Anaheim tonight, and then after that series, they go up to play Seattle, who's got a great pitching staff, and they're trying to make a run at this thing as well. So it's a tough road trip for the Orioles. And the Blue Jays have to keep their focus on the Red Sox. There's no question about that. We mentioned the Sox have won four in a row. But so many things are coming to Alex at this point that factor into his decisions. You know, where is Sanchez? Can he help us now out of the bullpen? Is he going to be an asset? Do we need more arms in the bullpen, or should we go for an extra bat? And who can that bat be? And to his credit, he's run in every possibility that he can out of the minor leagues. Brad Glenn, he's used Cole Gillespie, he's used Nolan Rymel, he's gotten Anthony Ghost back three or four times, and nobody has come through for him. So that's been the concern. So you just can't continue to play these fantasy league games in a one-dimensional world when he's got to think about all these other factors, including having a very limited salary gap where he can't really do an awful lot to add salary.
Thanks for this, Buck. We'll be watching tonight. Have a good one.
All right. You guys have a great day.
All right. That is Buck Martinez, the television play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. It is Brady and Walker on your Monday, 8:33. Andrew Walker, Eric Smith. Just a quick note. Today is the day for Cody Franzen and arbitration. Now, the hearing is scheduled for later on today between the Leafs and Cody Franzen. And according to reports, the Leafs came to the table, said, you made $2 million last year, didn't have a good year, we want you $2 million again. The Franzen camp says, it's time to get paid. I'm a point producer. 4.2 is our figure. Now, they can still reach a settlement, and I think this will happen at some point today prior to that hearing. And they can do it walking into the boardroom. Meet in the middle, $3 million. Does that sound about right? And don't forget, if it's on a one-year deal, if it's on a two-year deal prior to arbitration, the key just might be finding a deal that you can trade in the next couple of months. Because I still don't think that Cody Franzen is a guy that's going to be back. In fact, you might believe that they had him traded already for Josh Georges before Georges said thanks but no thanks and wound up in Buffalo. It is 8:34, Brady and Walker. At 8:42, we get back into the NBA with Eric Smith. Where do the Raptors stack up? Where do the Cleveland Cavaliers stack up? And is that price, the rumored price for Kevin Love, way too big to say no to if you are the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
8:42 on your Monday. Good morning. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith joins me in studio all week. I'm Andrew Walker. When it comes to Greg Brady, yeah, he takes a lot of vacation, but I guess it's because he gets a lot of vacation.
Yeah, how come you don't have that deal?
Hey, it's not his fault. It's like Dion Phaneuf, right? He signed 7 years, $49 million, and everybody is on him for it. Not his fault that's what they offered him. Not his fault he signed the deal. So don't be mad at Greg. It's not his fault. He gets the weeks of vacation. He's going to use it. So you got me and Eric Smith this week.
Well, I can, if people are missing him, I can talk about bad 80s music, football.
Right, Lilith Fair.
Lilith Fair. Yeah,
The View.
Oh, he really? No, yeah. Okay, I don't want to.
Colorful Pants.
He does wear some funky
all
pants.
All the things that Brady likes. But it's Eric Smith and myself all week long. Good to have you in. Want to get to this Colby Lewis thing. We touched on it a couple hours ago. But Colby Lewis, Colby Rasmus from Saturday. I was so embarrassed for the Texas Rangers pitcher. I'll tell you why. We'll describe what happened in case you missed it. First up, though, the NBA's Eastern Conference, and you would know, obviously, Eric's been around Sportsnet for 15 years, and now making your living covering the Raptors on television and radio, do a great job. Covering the Raptors right now, I imagine, must be pretty exciting.
It was
a
good year. It was fun.
Yeah, and going ahead to next year, highly anticipated, probably in the conversation for the most highly anticipated season of all time.
Mm-hmm. It would be right up there. I mean, the only other year that would be comparable would be following up on you know, the near
the
Eastern
shot,
Conference
right?
Championship,
yeah.
The shot that just rimmed out for Vince Carter. But that was the summer that, you know, re-signing a bunch of guys and, you know, taking the Olajuwon chance, which obviously blew up. But you know, that was the summer of guys coming back and committing, and you're thinking about what could be with this team.
Okay, so here's a question. Because back then, it was at an all-time high, and we couldn't wait for the season to begin the next year. And it fell a little flat. What are the chances of, I don't want to say fall flat, but when you see a young hockey player, your first-round pick, Morgan Rielly, whatever, had 30 points last year. It's every fan's reaction to say, okay, the kid's 20 years old. Next year he'll have 35 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year he'll have 50 points. Score 15 goals, that player, player X, he'll score 20 the next year. Progression, progression, progression. Everyone thinks that way with the DeRozans, the Valanciunases, Kyle Lowry is back. But is there a sense of danger here that this is a club that won 48 games, had the best year in franchise history? Is there the chance that it doesn't always take that next step, even in a very average Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. There's 100% there's a chance that happens. But I think when you look at this team, health was a major reason why the team was able to do what they did last year as well. For the most part, key players stayed healthy for most of the year.
Terrence Ross really the only exception,
well,
right?
Yeah, and I tell you, though, to your point, Andrew, the two main keys or main cogs to this team would probably still continue to be two third-year players in your starting lineup in Valanciunas and Terrence Ross. Terrence Ross has to be as good as he was last year, but be that much better on both ends, but especially defensively. He's got to be able to be more physical with guys and stop guys defensively. And Valanciunas has to improve defensively, has to improve his athleticism, must score more, but in order to score more, he's got to get the ball more, he's got to rebound more. I mean, as good as he was, there needs to be that next level. So if this team, let's just assume for a second, and that could be dangerous, but let's assume that DeRozan is who he was last year. Let's assume that Lowry is who he is and can stay healthy. Let's assume that you still get the solid production off the bench from a Vasquez and a Patterson. You need to have those two young players in Valanciunas and Ross take that next step and continue to move forward, because if they don't, there's a serious gap.
So where do they stack up in the East? You look a year ago, and from day one of training camp till the final buzzer sounded in the Eastern Conference Final, we knew that it was going to be Miami and Indiana. And that's how it played out, and that's how it was. Both of those teams unequivocally got worse. The Pacers lost Stevenson. The Heat obviously lost LeBron. Chicago's interesting. Washington's interesting. Cleveland's interesting. But those two teams have taken steps back, in theory. So where do the Raptors stack up now, in your view?
To me, they are exactly where they were. I think they're a top four or five team in the conference. But I think, you can make a case for it. You mentioned Washington. They're a very interesting story when you think about, John Wall and Bradley Beal in the backcourt and bringing back Gortat. They lose a guy in Trevor Ariza, though. So, they add Paul Pierce. What does he bring in, his veteran leadership and his scoring and his knowledge of the game? Does he add something to that team, even in the absence of a guy like Ariza going, who was a key part in what the Wizards did last year? I think when you look at the Raptors, in my opinion, still the best team in their division. They're better than New York. I think they're better than Brooklyn, especially losing their coach and losing a guy like Pierce, losing a player like Sean Livingston. I think Toronto is the best team in the Atlantic Division. So that alone, just by seeding, will give them a top 3-4 seed. But amongst the talent on paper, again, I put him amongst the top 4 or 5 in the conference. And you can make a case, you know, if the Cavs, as of the second, still don't have Kevin Love, if they don't get Kevin Love, you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron, but still a lot of issues on that team in other spots. Miami taking a step back. As you said, Pacers taking a step back. You can make a case for a good 5-6 teams in the East having a shot to win the whole thing. The conference, in a sense, to me, is open right now.
And you can make a case for the Raptors. I know. And it's at least it's,
and I'm not saying
it's a conversation. You can make the case. But also, I mean, a factor that I'll be looking at is expectations. You look last year where this team started and then the Rudy Gay trade. In terms of expectations, they were below zero.
Sure.
Like, they weren't even on the radar in terms of what expectations. It's like, what's the playoffs? Playoffs, yeah. Win a game. But then they started winning. There still wasn't really expectations. We applauded. The Leafs lose game 7, and it was a collapse. And it was. But we applauded the Raptors for getting to game 7. There's going to be expectations this year. And that's something incredibly new for this team over the last 6 years, 7 seasons.
Yeah. Well, and the expectations, not just from management and from, you know, wins and losses on the floor, but the fans, and not just the fans in Toronto. Because, you know, you knew you had your fans in Toronto that continue to come down to the ACC, 16, 18, 19,000 plus people coming to watch the game. It was Maple Leaf Square. It was radio and television ratings. It was the fact that the country was starting to get behind this team a little bit now. And I don't think you can lose that momentum. So it's going to be imperative on this team to continue to perform at that level. And there can't be room for slippage. Even if the slippage is, you know, you make the playoffs and you bow out in the first round again, at least you're still pushing that ball forward. You cannot have a drop-off at all. This is the moment in time where, you know, we talk about the Blue Jays recognizing that moment. I think the Raptors going forward for the next, you know, few seasons at least, they've got to be in that sort of buyer mentality where they're aggressive in how they play, how they handle their business, and aggressive in terms of making moves as that we go on here to see how this unfolds and if they need improvements as time goes on.
The Jeff Blair Show coming up at 9. George Russick and Jeff Samet are going to have it in lieu of Jeff Blair today. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith in all week on Brady and Walker. So the Blue Jays take 2 of 3 from the Rangers. They get the Red Sox tonight at the Rogers Center, the opening of a 4-game set. Drew Hutchison and John Lackey on the Hill tonight. The lasting memory for me this weekend was the Colby Lewis, Colby Rasmus incident from Saturday. Now, reset a little bit what happened here and what the game situation was. I'm going to read what Colby Lewis had to say after.
So it was the 5th inning Saturday. The Jays are up 2-0. The Rangers basically are trying to stack up the right side against Rasmus, and Rasmus decides with 2 outs to put down a bunt to the left side to reach base.
And it works, and he gets to first. Now, Lewis is visibly upset, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why. It's not a 10-0 game. It's not the 9th inning. And Colby Lewis basically makes up an unwritten rule, and it was so embarrassing. So after the game, I'm listening to the audio, and what Colby Lewis had to say when he met with the media. And this is after he's had time to cool off. He's been out of the ballgame for 2 innings or for 2 hours already. And you know when you watch like a, I don't know, we'll say like a bad Ben Stiller movie, and the main character is such a screw-up, and he does something or screws up a relationship or wrecks a priceless porcelain vase, and you're so embarrassed for him that you kind of like watch between your fingers, even if you're by yourself. That's what I was like with Colby Lewis as I was reading this. I told Rasmus I didn't appreciate it, Lewis says. You're up by 2 runs with 2 outs, and you laid on a bunt. I don't think that's the way the game should be played. Up 2 runs in the 5th inning.
It's ridiculous.
It's so embarrassing.
So it's okay to put a little league shift on and have 3 guys playing on one side of the field, but it's not okay for me to drag a bunt down to try and see if I can take advantage of that massive gap on the left side.
Here's Lewis again. He says, Rasmus didn't steal within the first 2 pitches to put himself in scoring position. That tells me he is solely looking out for himself and looking out for batting average. And I didn't appreciate it. Well, of course you're looking out for your batting average. There's two men out, and nobody on, and you're up 2. and you've lost like 99 of 100, find a way to get yourself on base. Find a way to score on an extra base hit. It's just, it was, I was so embarrassed for Colby Lewis just making up these unwritten rules.
That's got to be the frustration of the season, being 20 games below 500.
Yeah, it has
noted,
to be.
That's the noted only sure. way to give him any kind of slack on this, because otherwise it's completely ridiculous. But, I, you know, I was saying to you before, is there any sport that has more of these unwritten BS rules than baseball? This honorary code in baseball? We hear about stuff like this all
and
the
I
time.
And I like it. I'm a purist. I like that you shouldn't steal up, you know, by this many runs. You shouldn't square to bunt on three, all that kind of stuff. I'm a fan. This just took it to another level. Colby Lewis, I know he won our worst player of the weekend early yes. in the show as well. Eric Smith, Andrew Walker, we're back all week. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. 854 Sportsnet 590 The Fan.